Well, thank you for this, Wendy.
Sure.
Thank you very much. That simplifies things. This is a very heavy book. It's hard to read through. What I did was divide this little Mountains and Waters Sutra into about 9 different pieces, I think, just to make it easier for us to go through it. And maybe I should tell you what those are, though it probably doesn't matter. What I'd like to do tonight is to read the first 2 sections. And it's been divided into sections with this horizontal line, so it's easy to find our way through it. So we'll do a few paragraphs each time, and that will make it easier. It's called a sutra, even though only Buddha's words are supposed to be a sutra. So this is a little strange to be calling this a sutra, except that it's based on Dogen's understanding that all beings, all sentient and so-called non-sentient beings, are Buddha nature. And so everything is a sutra. Everything is expressing Buddha Dharma at all times. Not just people, not just great masters, but absolutely everything. So the mountains and waters, they themselves are expressing the Dharma constantly. So does someone want to read the first paragraph?
I'll read my afternoon.
Thank you.
Mountains and Waters Sutra. Mountains and waters right now actualize the ancient Buddha expression. Each, abiding in its condition, unfolds its full potential. Because mountains and waters have been active since before the empty eon, they are alive at this moment. Because they have been the self since before form arose, they are emancipation actualized. Because mountains are high and broad, their way of riding the clouds always extends from the mountains. Their wondrous power of soaring in the wind comes freely from the mountains.
So first of all, he's talking about right now, not some other time, which is the only way to express our life, really. So mountains, water, right now actualize the ancient Buddha expression. Expression meaning the teaching, or the Dharma, or the way. It's expressing, meaning they have a way of speaking, and also of acting. They unfold its full potential. Each abiding in its condition unfolds its full potential. We too, it's the same for us. We abide in our condition. Our condition is in so many ways given, and yet we are unfolding, ripening, blooming in our position, just as we are. So that's Dogen's basic message here, or a big piece of it, that we too, just like the mountains and the waters, are a living expression of the teaching of the Dharma itself. How could it be otherwise? Actually. The empty eon is before the Big Bang. So this is infinite, going back into the infinite past. This has been true. And they are alive at this moment. There's that old story about Zazen. Somebody asked an old master about Zazen. Is it a bliss state? Is it this state or that state? And the old master finally said, no, it's alive. Zazen is alive. It's not zoning out or entering a heavenly realm or anything like that. It's present and it's alive. Who would like to read the next paragraph? You can go ahead if you want, Jeffrey.
Sure, yeah. Said to the assembly, "The green mountains are always walking. The stone woman gives birth to a child at night. Mountains do not lack the characteristics of mountains. Therefore, they always abide in ease and always walk. Examine in detail the characteristic of the mountains walking. Mountains walking is just like human walking. Accordingly, do not doubt mountains walking, even though it does not look the same as human walking. The Buddha's ancestors' words point to walking. This is fundamental understanding. Penetrate these words. Because green mountains walk, they are permanent. Although they walk more swiftly than the wind, someone in the mountains does not notice or understand it. In the mountains means the blossoming of the entire world. People outside the mountains do not notice or understand the mountains walking. Those without eyes to see mountains cannot notice, understand, see, or hear this reality. If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know your own walking. It is not that you do not walk, but that you do not know or understand your own walking. Since you do know your own walking, you should fully know the green mountains walking. Green mountains are neither sentient nor insentient. You are neither sentient nor insentient. At this moment, you cannot doubt the green mountains walking."
So this can seem like a puzzle or a conundrum, because he's using such amazing images. We think of mountains as way too big to be walking. And yet if we consider an actual mountain, it's constantly moving, constantly changing. And the more closely we look, the more active it is. Even the most stable mountain is shifting and changing all the time. The whole crust of the earth is constantly changing all the time. So this isn't some kind of fancy poetic exaggeration. This is the truth of it. And we just think of mountains as this big thing, just like we draw in school and kindergarten, this big pointy thing. But if we go up in the mountains, often people experience something like samadhi when they go into the mountains. But getting into the mountains and into that very high, clear, pure air does something to the mind that opens it up in a way that Zazen does too. And I think that has something to do with the way that he's expressing this, that it's a familiar kind of experience for us, just the mountains, as we become intimate with our life and everything around us. Dogen talks about the whole body of emptiness leaping out of itself, that all beings are leaping out of themselves from the from emptiness, the body of emptiness. You'd say the Dharmakaya is thoroughly expressing itself in every moment as everything lives, as life lives itself. So in our practice, they say that all dharmas are empty. And this means that nothing is left out. We think of emptiness as a cup with nothing in it. But emptiness is everything connected to everything else seamlessly. And nothing is left out. And, they say, nothing bumps into anything else. We're not flying around in the air and crashing into each other the way we would be in a spaceship. We're held on the ground, and we're discreet and separate in a very nice way so that we don't bump into each other very often, and it's really upsetting when we do. So usually we have this miraculous way of being on the earth that we take very much for granted. And Dogen is pointing out that look at it. See what it's like, really. What is it like to walk? Are you walking? Or is walking you? Or is walking walking? How does walking happen? We take it for granted until we can't do it anymore. And then it becomes a big subject. But it's also, I think, Kinhin is a really excellent practice because it gets us up and walking in such a slow way that if we pay close attention, we begin to feel what it is, the mystery of it. We can't say, I'm walking, exactly. We can't say something else is walking. It's just happening. Happening most marvelously. And so the mountains walking is the same. Happening most marvelously. He says, if you doubt mountains walking, you don't know your own walking. And if you don't know your own walking, you should know the Green Mountains walking. So he doesn't give us any space. At this moment, he says again, right now actualize the ancient Buddha expression, he starts out, and then he ends, at this moment, you cannot doubt the green mountains walking. At this moment. So Dogen wrote two things, two little things, one before this one, called The Sound of the Valley Stream, which was also on the same subject. And he wrote these both before he moved into the mountains. So it's like he was preparing his mind and his students' minds for the move into the remote mountains of Aheiji. And The Sound of the Valley Streams is based on a poem by Su Tung Po, who is one of the most wonderful Chinese poets of all, whose teacher preached to his group with Su Tung Po in it on insentience and how insentience is so important to understand for a poet. What's alive and what's not alive? What's real and what's not real? Are insentient things the same as sentient things? And so he left his teacher with this sort of boiling around in his mind, wondering, and went to a famous spa and spent the night sleeping outside. And he was awakened in the middle of the night with the sound of little streams running through the land. And he was completely awakened by the sound of those brooks. And so he made a poem, of course, since he was a poet. And the poem is, "The sounds of the stream are Buddha's long, broad tongue. The sights of the mountains are his pure body. 84,000 gatas throughout the night. How can I express them to others someday?" So Dogen asks a very interesting question about this. He says, is it the poet that is enlightened? Or is it that the mountains and the waters that are enlightened? Those who have discerning eyes should never fail to understand Buddha's long, broad tongue and his pure body. So I think that's a good beginning. There are questions? Yeah.
I was just thinking that the mountains and waters existed before thought. So.
Yeah. Yes.
And also I just learned aspen trees, they're all part of the same single root system.
Oh, yes. That's very cool. Yeah. Yeah. They live in a grove, and they look like they're separate trees, but they all have the same root system. And mushrooms are that way, too. There are miles of mushrooms in some forests that are all the same under the ground. It's the same one gene pool. It's great. Yes.
In translations, the Green Mountains I read also as Vergent Mountains, which is a word I really like.
Yeah.
Vergent.
Latin.
One of the things that I like is the idea of the mountains are also us as Zen practitioners.
Yes.
We sit very quietly That's our one step back.
Mm-hmm.
When we come into this hall and sit that way, we're all like little mountains sitting here. And then when we get up and do our kin-hin, it's like walking mountains, little, little walking mountains. The amount of Buddhist metaphor in this is always just almost breathtaking. Sometimes when I put it down, it's just, wow. he seems to be always at suggesting these things at these very polar opposites,
mm-hmm.
and making you kind of leap through them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Where I teach, I look at up at Mount Ung, and in our conversation about the Santa Cruz Mountains as we entered, mm-hmm. I remembered when I was a fairly young man in my 20s living up off of Summit, and I had a view which on clear days I could see all the way down to Monterey. And that overview, it was, I tried to paint it, mm-hmm. I tried to write about it. It was like living in a Chinese landscape painting.
Yeah.
And now I look up all the time at Mount Eminem, which is around 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about what I'm looking at is also has this view which is much larger than the view I have of it. It has of me and everything else.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing mm-hmm. he does in this stuff. He'll talk about seeing everything in a mote of dust.
Yes.
And then, you know, this big universe idea all at the same time. And all men, he can do the whole thing in one sentence.
Yeah.
I just never cease to enjoy reading and learning from that. And when I first picked it up in my 20s, I just couldn't understand any of it. You know, it was just mm-hmm. way beyond me, walking mountains and where is this stuff going? So, but when you sit long enough, read them often, mm-hmm. some of it begins to penetrate this dull skull.
And Thich Nhat Hanh always suggests, sit like a mountain, sit like a blooming rose, sit like a still pool.
I missed the last
one. Still pool. So those
like
are kind of...
Like a mountain.
Sit like a mountain.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
that was...
Yeah, those
I
are all...
I haven't been able to, you know, I have spent a fair time in the... a fair amount of time out there and backpacking and stuff, but I haven't actually notice them walking. But I do when I do zazen in the mountains. I really do. Very easy to become aware of the sitting like a mountain. I mean, they're just there. I mean, these huge rocks and peaks and things, and they've been there for millions and millions of years, and they just always just there.
They're very present.
And,
yeah.
So it does make for a very nice surrounding for something you can learn from the mountains.
Yes. Many things.
And just learn to just be there like they are. But I'll have to look more closely next time.
Yeah, I don't think Dogen knew about the shifting Teutonic plates.
He didn't have to. Because mountains, you know, they're always moving.
Yeah.
There are always rocks falling down.
Yeah,
continually.
And they're changing.
Yeah. They're always shifting and changing, and the light is changing, and they look like they're a different mountain on different, in different seasons, different days, different times of day. So if you really pay attention, I mean, even to these mountains, it's like that too. They're constantly changing.
Our perception of them is?
Well, that's... But our perception is based on what we're receiving from them. So it goes both ways. It's a mutual thing. And of course, we too are constantly changing in the same way. Continually. We think we're the same, of course, but actually it's just like the mountains. We're not the same every day.
Well, I certainly think we're, science and things like plate tectonics can certainly lend a note in this conversation, but, you know, Mount Tamalpais will be looking at Los Angeles in a million years. Because that's where it's supposed to be, you know, as it slowly creeps up from where it's at. And I've read some really interesting commentaries on what we've just been reading from people who have, gone on what Ron was talking about, a hike, but with this sutra as their point of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, I read about this one man who had lost his wife and was using this as a healing activity, and it really blocked his practice. And the fact that his wife had passed to a greater and deeper need.
Mm-hmm.
And just to use all those particular elements, this a nature just really, we can get so much more intimate, I think, with ourselves.
Yes.
When we put away the tech toys, and the sound of the automobile. And,
mm-hmm.
You've indicated this. This is what he did. He stepped away from. He could have hung out in Kyoto.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, the place to be.
Yeah.
And went off to some really cold and difficult place.
Yeah.
To eke out those first years.
Yeah.
So he really walked his talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think he loved it up there. He wrote a lot of poems about the snow and the mountain peaks. And, yeah. Well, I don't have a watch tonight. So, next time, let's read the next two sets.
Here?
Probably not.
So that's just rejected.
That's where the Green Mountains first came up.
I see. What about the stone woman? You know, there was a stone woman in a precious...
In a mirror. Good. Yeah, in a precious mirror. Well, that's a metaphor for that has a lot of different meanings. I'm trying to think how it goes in the precious mirror that it has.
Gets up dancing. I think there's a man.
The wooden man.
Wooden man
sings and the stone woman dances. Right. So it's saying that inanimate isn't so inanimate. Inanimate has life too. And that's his whole basic message that what. what seems to us fixed and isn't fixed at all, that even the stones sing and dance. And we know that if we get to know them too. And stones give birth to other stones.
I had read that some metaphorical, using that as a metaphor, there was an enlightenment experience from a monk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The giving to a child is, you know, all that sitting. But that's what I read.
Yeah, that's. I don't. That's one of the enlightenment stories.
Yeah.